Good morning. Our reading this morning is from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 14. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. It was 2 days before the Passover and the festival of unleavened bread. The chief priests and scribes were looking for a way to arrest Jesus by stealth and kill him. For they said, "Not during the festival, or there may be a riot among the people." While he was at Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at the table, a woman came with an alabaster jar of very costly ointment of nard, and she broke open the jar and poured the ointment on his head. But some were there who said to one another in anger, "Why was the ointment wasted in this way? For this ointment could have been sold for more than 300 denarii, and the money given to the poor." And they scolded her. But Jesus said, "Let her alone. Why do you trouble her? She has performed a good service for me. For you always have the poor with you, and you can show kindness to them whenever you wish. But you will not always have me. She has done what she could. She has anointed my body before its burial. Truly, I tell you, wherever the good news is proclaimed in the whole world, what she has done will be told in remembrance of her." God's word is life.
This past week with my dad in hospital, I'm realizing there is so much I'm learning and so much to learn about companioning someone who is nearing the end of their life. As family members arrive from out of town, we've been endeavoring to come alongside Dad to offer reassurance. With him waking in the night, not knowing where he is, and his confusion in the clear light of day about what is happening, one of us has been there with him as the one recognizable factor in his strange new world. We've cycled through the explanation countless times. This is where you are. This is how you got here. This is what we're waiting for. But with Dad's memory loss, the effect of explanation is fleeting at best. Beyond our words, I realize it is our physical presence that matters, that eases his distress. And no doubt the compassionate quality of that presence, our showing up with loving kindness. It's hard to know what is next for Dad. What the next moves are now that he, for a moment at least, was back in his own suite with 24-hour care. What of his strength will he regain? What of his clarity of mind? These things that have enabled him to live where he is and where he is so grateful to be. Who are we for each other as the end of life draws nearer? How are we for each other? And how are we in ourselves, which has such a bearing on how we are for each other? And what is it that we are supporting as we near the end? This past week, our focus has been on making sure that Dad doesn't fall. And now realizing that if that continues to be our highest consideration above all else, what does that mean? What gets neglected if his physical safety is everything? What about matters of the heart? It's quite a dance. Especially when I come to appreciate how powerful a factor is my own bag of emotions and wishes, quite apart from Dad's, that are at work making our way. In other words, while we might have imagined we were looking toward the end of Dad's life, there's this dawning that, of course, this comes with an ending as well for us who love him. So how might we tend these endings in a way that make for a communion of our hearts? As you can hear, I'm asking a lot of questions. Well, then along comes this story from Mark's gospel that was already lined up for this Sunday well before the events of this past week in our family. This story of facing into the end of life as Jesus moves ever closer to his death. And so what might there be in this encounter that has something to offer us, not just me and my own family, but any one of us as we would contemplate the end of our own lives or the lives of our loved ones? The story opens with Jesus in the home of Simon the leper, we're told, at the table for a meal. This is Jesus moving toward the end in the characteristic fashion of his life, living out this practice of friendship, sitting with, eating with whoever would have him. The meal is underway when a woman enters the room. We're not given to know her name or her connection with Simon or Jesus. But what follows indicates that she has great love for Jesus. Great love and a deep knowing. It appears as though she is there without explicit invitation. Jesus seems to arrive. Unconcerned, it seems, about the usual protocols. Unconcerned, perhaps, or somehow not letting her fears or expectations get in the way. It is the way of love sometimes to take over, to take us over those hesitations, to move us past whatever obstacles that would keep us from each other. I wonder if there's something here about entrusting ourselves to love's bold way. In this case, she comes with this alabaster jar of oil, luxurious, fragrant oil. This is her, "How do I love thee?" She opens the flask and pours it out, every last drop, pours it over his dear head. In a similar rendering of the story in John's gospel, she pours it over his feet and wipes them with his hair, with her hair. There is no holding back. She claims the gift of this moment for what it is, the opportunity to express her tender, loving care while there is yet time. How often it happens that it's not until a person has died that our appreciation comes tumbling out, perhaps at the celebration of their life. What might we be keeping bottled up in a way when now is the time to let it flow? And if words get in the way, or if words are not enduring, how else might we convey what our hearts hold? Have we any notion of the treasure of our love? Well, to be sure, what this woman does for Jesus serves an essential need in her to communicate her love. And then there is what happens for Jesus through his receptivity that is equally powerful for him and undoubtedly for her. Jesus, who we are so used to seeing in giving mode, restoring health and strength and dignity, making a way, making room, granting freedom, offering courage, giving life. Now, here he is all about receiving. Perceiving the healing gift that she is offering and just letting it bless him, strengthen and dignify him. Where the coming days loom large and can't help but be dreaded, he allows this woman to bring him into this moment now, to savor this moment now, knowing that the day of his death is coming, but right now he is alive and able to receive whatever kindness, whatever tenderness, whatever gratefulness for what he has meant to her through his life. He may even be receiving through her gift even more than she ever hoped to convey. It's the way of the Spirit to multiply the gift, is it not? So when others at the table take offense and react to what they see as waste, Jesus hears nothing of it. What has happened for him through what she has done is beyond measure. They take exception to the cost. If that ointment was sold, so much could have been done for the poor, they say, and so it could. But Jesus, friend of the poor, he refuses to let this be framed in terms of him versus the poor. He knows well the systems that keep people poor, and how every day, if people so wish, there is opportunity to care for poor people. The call to care for the poor never ceases. These folks at the table could, if they wished, go and do that right now and in all their days to come. But what this woman knows and is unafraid to acknowledge that they can't or they won't see is the horror that Jesus is about to endure in his frail flesh. Nobody else is addressing that, at least not in the way that draws them near to care for his aching heart. But she, knowing his urgent need of compassion, of comfort, of solace, knowing that the time is short to express all the gratitude and affection that she carries in her heart, she acts now. Far from shunning her gift, he receives it for all it's worth and blesses her, such that to this day, even though we may not know her name, we remember her. So imagine this, as one person suggests it might have happened. Having already been anointed with love for his burial, Jesus lives the days ahead more truly, more in touch, not less, more himself, not less. Something about his felt experience of her unreserved outpouring of love made him ready to wash feet, pour out his body, and to face his death with love. And so he rises from that table in the home of Simon, risen. Maybe in that lies something of the answer to that question: what is it that we are supporting as we care for each other as the end of life draws near in its time? Maybe it is this, that whatever the goodness this life has been about, that we might be about supporting the pouring out of that goodness right to the last drop.